ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Today we'll be hearing the glories of Srila Prabhupada in connection with his incorporation of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness in July of 1966. Every year we celebrate this auspicious day, and every year I find more and more details. It's endless. All of the wonderful things that Srila Prabhupada did to establish ISKCON, by which we can all be sitting here today in hundreds of temples around the world. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutle Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Tinamine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Sunyavari Paschati Deshatarine Om Agyanatim Randasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Vancha Kalpa Turubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha Shri Shri Gornitai, they appeared in the same Divya Yuga that Shri Krishna appeared. Every day of Lord Brahma, the seventh Manvantar, 28th Divya Yuga cycle, at the end of Dwapara Yuga, Sri Krishna appears to attract the living entities back to the spiritual world. That same yuga, that same era, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appears, because Sri Krishna, in the Bhagavad Gita, he brings the living entity to the point of surrender. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he teaches us how to surrender to the Supreme Lord. So his prediction was that his name and the chanting of Hare Krishna Maha Mantra would be heard all over the world. In his lifetime, while he was present, he traveled throughout India to spread the chanting of Hare Krishna. And then through the parampara system, gradually, the glories of Bhakti Yoga and Krishna consciousness spread throughout India. Finally, through the parampara system, during the renaissance of Gaudiya Vaishnavism, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he began to actually preach outside of the borders of India by sending literature to England, to Canada, anywhere that they would accept his books. And then he prayed to the Lord for a Vaikuntha man to assist him, and that was Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he went a step further, and after establishing 64 mats in India, he sent his sannyasi disciples outside of India, to Burma, to Germany, to London, to establish temples. There was minor success. Then, because Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur had predicted that there would be a Senapati. Senapati means a great general who would take this Krishna consciousness all over the world. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, just before he left this world, after previously giving the same instruction to Srila Prabhupada, he again reiterated that I want you to go to the Western countries and preach in the English language. So this was Srila Prabhupada's direct instruction from his Guru Maharaj. And he was meditating since the time of 1922 up to the time of 1932, when Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati told him, if you ever get money, print books. Then 1933, when he took official diksha, double diksha at the same time in Allahabad. Finally, now 1936, his Guru Maharaj has disappeared, and he has a great responsibility. After struggling here in India, first he tried in India, he was invited to Jhansi, that's in UP. So Prabhupada made his first constitution, his first prospectus, and his first government application in Lucknow. So the League of Devotees was first established here in UP. And Prabhupada hoped that from Jhansi, he could begin this preaching all over the world. But he had many hurdles. First of all, he had no support from the Gaudiya Math. They all had their own temples, and they had their own men, and no money, and they had to support their own preaching work. Plus, the people in Jhansi, who were very enthusiastic for Prabhupada's program, by a turn of events, the governor's wife, she wanted the property that Prabhupada was given, and Prabhupada, in, you can say, frustration, he left that place and went to join his godbrothers here in Mathura. From Mathura, he came to Vrindavan and began to write, because this was how Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur and his spiritual master encouraged him to write books. So after he had completed 3 volumes of Srimad Bhagavatam, he prepared to make the first flight, not by plane, to what he considered the most important country in the world, which was America, because he saw that whatever the Americans are doing, the whole rest of the world is following. So he didn't want to go to London, he didn't want to go to Germany, he wanted to go to America. He got a free passage, 1 month journey on a steamship. He had 2 heart attacks, suffered intensely. He wondered if he would even survive the journey. But then by Krishna's arrangement, he arrived in America, first in Boston. In Boston, he saw the degradation immediately on his first step onto the country. And he wondered, if I start preaching, no illicit sex, no meeting, no gambling, no intoxication, these Americans who are so much covered by passion and ignorance, they'll simply say to me, please go home, Swami. But he had a mission. And even Sumati Morarji told him, don't come back until you've accomplished something. Because she had given him the ticket. She wanted him to be successful. So Prabhupada was all alone. It was as if, because he had practically died on the ship, it was as if he had taken a new birth there. And the first place he stayed was in the home of the Agarwals, Gopal Agarwal. They were meat eaters. When Prabhupada cooked, opened up the refrigerator, there would be meat in their refrigerator. But he tolerated, and he made his first steps. He saw that the American people were pious. They believed in God, but they didn't have a full concept of who God was and how to love Him. He knew there in Butler, Pennsylvania, he wouldn't be able to accomplish much. So after about a month, he said goodbye to the Agarwals and decided to make that big step into the Big Apple. New York City is sometimes called the Big Apple. When you have a Big Apple, that means you get and it's very nice and sweet. A lot of worms like to go in and live in that apple. So the Big Apple of New York City, Prabhupada considered New York to be the most important city in the most important country. So he wanted to preach there. And he had 1 address. So from the family, the Grihamedis actually, you know, they didn't know much about Krishna consciousness. From that setting, first preaching, he then went to New York and stayed under the auspices of an impersonal yogi, Dr. Ramamurti Mishra. Dr. Ramamurti Mishra, he was preaching impersonalism. He had a society, a yoga society, and he was established. He had a yoga studio, he had an ashram in the countryside, but he personally was dying from poor health. So Prabhupada would cook for him. And we all know the effects of prasadam. So Dr. Mishra, he allowed Prabhupada to lead kirtan. But when Prabhupada began to argue with Dr. Mishra in front of all of Dr. Mishra's students about the superiority of personal Vaishnavism, he didn't allow him to preach. So Prabhupada, he decided, I have to have my own place. And in a little room he rented, he began his own classes from the Bhagavad Gita. And some of the students of Dr. Mishra would come to hear him 3 evenings every week. But by Krishna's arrangement, though he was beginning his lecturing, and he bought a big, in those days we didn't have technology. One tape recorder weighed about 10 kilos, and the reels were this big. So he used to record all of his lectures, and it was there that the introduction of Bhagavad Gita was spoken by Srila Prabhupada, that we read now in our Bhagavad Gita as it is. Then he had a small typewriter that he had gotten. One day, while he was going about taking a walk, someone broke into his room, stole the 2 valuables that he had, his tape recorder and his typewriter. Then he was down to nothing. But the students, they said, no, no, don't worry, Swamiji, we will give you new tape recorder, new typewriter, but we feel you're not safe here. You should go to where the young people are. The young people were in another part of New York City. Where Prabhupada and Dr. Mishra were, that was uptown. Uptown is where the rich people live and where the parlor yogis live. They dressed in suits and ties, they smoked cigarettes, some of them even ate meat. And they had a following of rich widows and people who were not really interested in devoting themselves fully to spiritual life. They were just kind of dipping into what spiritual life is through impersonalism. So on the advice of some of Prabhupada's regular students there, he moved into the loft of Harvey Cohen, who would later become Haridas. Now a loft was on the 4th floor, so Prabhupada had to walk up 4 flights of steps. No elevator. And he was 70 years old at the time. There he had to share a very big, it's the size of this mandap here, with one drug-crazy hippie who was trying to assist Srila Prabhupada, but because of his bad habits, for example, he used to have a job and he would pay the rent. But as soon as Prabhupada moved in, he quit his job so that Prabhupada would pay the whole rent. So this was the type of person that Prabhupada had to live with, unfortunately. But immediately Prabhupada began, this is a picture of Prabhupada there at the loft. And it was in the most degraded, decrepit part of New York City. 30,000 alcoholics lived there on the streets. And if they were able to beg $2 a day, they would live in these terrible, filthy hotels and then go out and drink their intoxication on the streets together. It was a terrible place. But there were also young musicians in that area. So those musicians, they heard that a Swami had come to the Bowery, and they started attending his classes. And he built up a congregation. They would come, they wanted to learn Sanskrit, they wanted to jam. They wanted to jam they brought their musical instruments, and while Prabhupada had kirtan, they would play on all their musical instruments with Prabhupada. So there was some further interest amongst these young people who were visiting Prabhupada at the Bowery. But then one day, the boy that Prabhupada was staying with, he took too much LSD and he became crazy. And Prabhupada, he said to the boy, you're leaving the soap on the floor of the shower, and I'm an old man, and please put the soap up so that I don't slip. So the young boy, very ferociously, with a very frightening face, came to attack Srila Prabhupada at that time. And Prabhupada had to flee the apartment with just his bead bag. He didn't know where to go. He didn't know what to do. So he went to one of the most serious of his students, Mr. Michael Grant, who would later become Mukunda Das, who's still most devoted to Srila Prabhupada, and he asked him for help. So Mr. Michael, he found very quickly, within 2 weeks, a place for Srila Prabhupada to stay. And that was 26 Second Avenue. So at this place of 26 Second Avenue, Prabhupada, when he was in the Bowery, in the loft, one of the other students who had come, his name was Carl Jurgens. And he was also a musician, and he was an activist for all types of avant-garde societies. So he knew how to set up religious societies in America. So Prabhupada asked Carl that you please, he gave him this prospectus of the League of Devotees that Prabhupada had established in Lucknow. And he said, you please make a religious society for me here in America. So Carl, he called his lawyer, whose name was Stephen Goldsmith, and he introduced him to Srila Prabhupada. And Stephen Goldsmith, although he was a very well-established Jewish lawyer in New York City, he was fascinated at the idea of establishing a religious society for an Indian Swami. So he very much appreciated what Prabhupada was doing. The League of Devotees, that prospectus, Prabhupada had principles, 17 principles. And Mr. Goldsmith, he was able to reduce that down to 7 principles. Now, at that time in America, it was 1966, there was a war going on. And it wasn't in America. It was in the country of Vietnam, which is here in Southeast Asia. The Vietnamese wanted to break away from their colonists, the French, and they wanted to become their own nation. And the Americans tried to assist the French. So the Americans were sending all of the young men from America to fight in Vietnam. And the American young men did not want to fight. They saw no purpose in the war. It had nothing to do with America. So there were huge rallies going on. We were all part of that time, the disciples of Prabhupada, because we all grew up at that time. And there was always a fear amongst the young men that the government would come and draft them in the army. Draft means by force. They would have to become soldiers in the army and would be sent to Vietnam, and most of them died there, the young men. So huge rallies all over America were going on, and the police were attacking the protesters. And there was actually a war amongst the young people and the government at that time within America. And many of these young people, they were attracted to Prabhupada's teachings. And they would come and listen to Prabhupada now that he had his place at 26 Second Avenue. Prabhupada would just speak purely from the Bhagavad Gita, and we know that Bhagavad Gita, it's spoken on a battlefield. But that was a religious battle. And they considered that this war was not religious. It was purely political. So one evening, Mr. Goldsmith attended the lecture. And after the lecture, he stood up and he asked Prabhupada, if God is so kind, then why is he sending so many of our young men to be killed in Vietnam? And Prabhupada looked him in the eye and he said, you are slaughtering thousands of animals every day in the slaughterhouse. So, Krishna says, send your sons to get killed in the war. Because by the law of karma, whatever you do, it comes back to you. So because the people were slaughtering innocent animals in America simply for their sense gratification, Therefore, the American people were being slaughtered for no purpose in the war at Vietnam, and Prabhupada made that very clear to Mr. Goldsmith. So Mr. Goldsmith, he wanted to help Srila Prabhupada, and he felt that by establishing this religious society under the government laws of New York City, this would give some structure to what Prabhupada was trying to teach the American youth. So day by day, Prabhupada would ask Carl, he would go to see Mr. Goldsmith, and gradually, he was able to transform what he began in Jhansi. These are pictures of the beautiful place that Prabhupada had at Jhansi that was taken away from him by the governor's wife. Now, in a small storefront in New York City, Prabhupada was able to, again, take up this preaching mission of his spiritual master. So, beginning in June, Mr. Goldsmith began to establish the incorporation of ISKCON within New York City. Now, here in India, we have a different system. In India, we have the Charity Commission, and there's one society, and that society has many branches of ISKCON all over India. And the main office is in Bombay. That's why we have a bureau of ISKCON. Everything is controlled and overseen by our main office in Bombay. But America is different. In America, anytime you want to set up a religious society, wherever you are, you have to make a charter, just as Prabhupada was doing in New York City. So this incorporation that Prabhupada made in New York City was the foundation of every single ISKCON temple throughout America and gradually throughout the whole world. Mukunda, Michael Grant, who had helped Prabhupada to establish this New York center, he took that same constitution, the same charter that was incorporated, he made the same one in California, then he took it to England, he made it in England, and then he brought it here also to India and made it here in Bombay. So these 7 points that Srila Prabhupada established in the charter of ISKCON in New York City are the foundation of every single ISKCON center around the world. So Prabhupada, he had started by that time the Sunday feast. He started that in the loft. He made 12 preparations, 16 people came, and then he brought over to the 26th Second Avenue the distribution of prasadam, and he was getting some more dedicated students at that time. So the incorporation was going to cost $300. $100 to the government and $200 to the lawyer. So Carl, to help Prabhupada, he gave the $100 for the incorporation. And then Prabhupada had to collect. Now how did he collect? He would sell his Srimad Bhagavatams. They were $17 for a set of three. We all bought them. $17, little adds up. And then at the end of each lecture, Prabhupada would take an apple, he would cut it into many, many pieces, he would pop one slice into his mouth, he would put all those pieces into a basket, and someone would take around the basket, and people would throw in $1, $2, whatever they wanted. They were all young hippies, nobody had any money. So this is how Prabhupada was able to collect money in those days. Much difficulty. Not like what we have now with the announcements every morning. So Prabhupada, yes, he brought the $200 and the incorporation was made. Now, on July 1st, Prabhupada moved into 26th Second Avenue. And one evening, Mr. Goldsmith, he comes to the lecture. It was on June 11th. Before that, Prabhupada, he had to get trustees. So one morning, because Michael Grant, he was a musician, and he would do his music playing at night. in the nightclubs and different places like that. And he would come home in the morning and go to sleep. Well, Prabhupada knocks on his door, and he says, I need some trustees. I want you to sign this incorporation. So Michael, he signed it, and his girlfriend signed it, and they had all their friends sign it also. And then finally the day came when Mr. Goldsmith, he came to the Matchless Gifts one evening. He was sitting by the door in a suit and tie, not like the hippies with their hippie clothes. And Prabhupada saw him there in the back corner. And Prabhupada began preaching that we are preaching Bhagavad Gita exactly as Krishna spoke it. We're not doing any interpretation. We're not changing anything. And he gave the example that we have here in our audience Mr. Goldsmith, who was a lawyer. Now, he knows that by argument, you can turn anything upside down. And Prabhupada gave the example that in Calcutta, there was a rent tax that was levied by the city. Rent tax means what they're trying to do now. Even if you take rent, you're going to have to pay GST. So it's not a new thing. The government was already doing that way, way back. So Prabhupada said, they made the rent tax law, and one advocate, he was able to turn it completely upside down, so they had to scrap that law and make a new law. That's the way lawyers are, they're so powerful. So he introduced Mr. Goldsmith, and he said, you have something to say? Please stand up. And Mr. Goldsmith, he took out of his briefcase some papers. And he said, we are here, we need signatures for this incorporation of International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Now, by that time, there were already a few serious students. Two of them were Kirtanananda, he would be Kirtanananda, and Hayagriva. Keith and
Howard.
Thank you. Howard Wheeler. So they suggested to Srila Prabhupada, you're in America, no one has heard of Krishna, very few people. Why don't you call it International Society for God Consciousness? Prabhupada said, no. God is very unspecific. If they don't know who Krishna is, they should come to us and we will tell them who Krishna is. This is the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And then Prabhupada, after that, he made the acronym of ISKCON by putting the first letters together of International Society for Krishna and then Khan from consciousness. We shall call our society ISKCON. So the members who were sitting there in the lecture that evening, they stood up and they signed their names. And I think we have here, yes, these were the trustees. First was Michael Grant. He would become Mukunda. Then his girlfriend, they would later marry. That was Jan. She became Janaki. She was the first female disciple of Srila Prabhupada. And don't let anyone else fool you into saying that they were the first disciple. Janaki was the first female disciple of Srila Prabhupada. And she was the trustee of the original ISKCON Incorporated Society. She was the elder sister of Jamuna, who joined it later. Then there was James Green, who was Jagannath Das, initiated by Prabhupada, who later, unfortunately, left ISKCON. Then Paul Gardner. Paul Gardner was the landlord of 26 Second Avenue. And Donald Chapdelaine. Donald spoke French. And he was using 26 Second Avenue as a free place to live. And when nobody was in the big room, he would smoke marijuana. So after he signed and he was still living there, the devotees reported him to Prabhupada and Prabhupada politely asked him to leave. These are the type of people who were our trustees because Prabhupada needed signers. There was Raymond Mares. So he was an educated intellectual. He became Rai Ram, and he became the editor of Back to Godhead when it was begun 2 months later. Then Carl Jurgens, Prabhupada initiated him as Karlapati. And Rafael Balsam, he never took initiation, though he was willing to become a trustee. And Robert Lefkowitz, who was the first Ravindra Sarup in our society. He also left, and Prabhupada reinitiated another devotee, William Deadweiler, in 1971 as Ravindra Sarup. So now we'll go back. Just wanted you to know. So here's Prabhupada. Next to 26 Second Avenue was a gas station, a petrol pump. So the devotees wrote on the wall right there that Prabhupada has moved to 26 Second Avenue, come for kirtan. This is the entrance of the matchless gifts. So we may wonder, what does that mean, matchless gifts? Because we may think the matchless means nothing can compare to it. Well, the reason that that signboard was there was because before Prabhupada rented the storefront, there was a man, and he used to make gifts. He would empty out matchboxes, and he would paste them together into all different beautiful designs and containers, and he would display them in the front window. And that's why it was called matchless gifts. Unfortunately, or fortunately, his business failed. And Prabhupada, he gave the real meaning to matchless gifts by bringing Krishna consciousness to that storefront. Now, it was just a light bulb hanging down in the middle of the room, and everything was bare and very, very plain. So the devotees, they wanted to surprise Prabhupada one day. They went out and they bought what they thought was Hindu paintings from India, and they put them up all over the place. They painted it. They made a dais for Prabhupada, somewhere for Prabhupada to sit. And Harvey Cohen, Haridas, he was an artist. He made this beautiful painting of Panchatattva, and they made a picture of Radha Krishna behind Prabhupada. They were really trying. And when Prabhupada saw what they did, he said, yes, this is devotion. That without being asked, this is what Garga Muni learned. Because he knew that Prabhupada was the teacher, we were the students. But what is the relationship? And Prabhupada simply said the relationship between guru and disciple is that the disciple should assist the guru in his service to his guru. So that left a whole world of how can they assist Prabhupada. So they began finding ways that they could help Prabhupada. Keith, who was Kirtananda, he asked Prabhupada, can I start cooking? Because before, Prabhupada was cooking for all of the young men who lived there. Up to 15 people a day Prabhupada cooked for. They would eat 50 to 60 chapatis every day. So that way, these disciples, these devotees, they were learning how to assist Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada used to just type his books with two fingers. He didn't know how to type. He was typing all of his books with two fingers. So they found a typist, a boy who could type 60 words a minute. And with one lecture that would take them days to transcribe, he would do in half an hour. So this is the way the early devotees were learning how to serve Prabhupada and assist him in what he was doing. Now, Prabhupada, although he was still just within 26 Second Avenue, Prabhupada decided to begin the Sankirtan movement. And he told his fledgling followers that now we will go outside of the temple. So they got their musical instruments together and they walked to the closest park, which was Tompkins Square. And they sat down under a tree and they started to chant Hare Krishna. And this chanting would go on up to 6 hours, 3 hours and 3 hours, and Prabhupada would lead. And he didn't have a mridanga, he would just play little bongo drums. They were just this big, leading. And finally, one day, the devotees decided, well, Prabhupada's singing, we're all chanting, why don't we get up and dance? So the first two dancers were Brahmananda and Achyutananda. So they got up and started to dance, and then other devotees started to dance. And finally, soon, the whole groups were chanting and dancing and made a big crowd. So this attracted attention. And then the newspapers, they started to come and take pictures of Prabhupada. So this is one newspaper called the East Village Other. It was an avant-garde because where all the young people lived, of course, they had their own newspapers. But then the New York Times, they made a big article about Prabhupada, about the Swami's flock. And when Prabhupada saw that article in New York Times, he says, yes, now we are successful. Because the biggest newspaper in New York and in the world had now recognized Srila Prabhupada. So these are the seven principles. I've been asked not to read, but these principles are important enough. We should read these principles to understand what Prabhupada wanted within this ISKCON society. So, I'm just going to read the principles. I won't do any other reading. Number A is to systematically propagate spiritual knowledge to society at large and to educate all peoples in the techniques of spiritual life in order to check the imbalance of values in life and to achieve real unity and peace in the world. Srila Prabhupada, the word propagate was used in this number A. Prabhupada used the word preaching because all avatars, all great teachers, they all preached. Jesus Christ preached, Lord Buddha preached, Krishna himself preached to Arjuna, Lord Chaitanya also preached. So Srila Prabhupada, by using the word propagating, that's propaganda. Propaganda. He was taking the volume of Vedic literatures and preaching this to the American youth. So this preaching would be very effective. Number B, to propagate a consciousness of Krishna as it is revealed in the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. C, to bring the members of the society together with each other and nearer to Krishna, the prime entity, and thus to develop the idea within the members and humanity at large that each soul is part and parcel of the quality of Godhead, Krishna. D, to teach and encourage the Sankirtan movement, congregational chanting of the holy name of God, as revealed in the teachings of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. E, to erect for the members and for society at large a holy place of transcendental pastimes dedicated to the personality of Krishna. F, to bring the members closer together for the purpose of teaching a simpler and more natural way of life. Now, these are the first six. These principles, they were presented to a county clerk, an officer in the incorporation office in New York City. They didn't know who Krishna was. They didn't know who Lord Chaitanya was. They didn't know what Sankirtan was. But because of the first constitution, the first amendment in the American Constitution, every American has the right to the freedom of religion. Because America was based on freedom of religion. There was a lot of religious persecution going on in Europe, so those who were being persecuted, they came to America. America is a melting pot of people from all over the world who came there to that new world to live and practice their own religions. So although none of this was understandable to the county officers in New York City, because it was a religion, they accepted it. So this was for the government. But internally, how was Prabhupada teaching his students? Within the 22nd Avenue, Prabhupada put up three notices. One notice was the 10 offenses against the holy name, that we all know what they are. So Along with chanting Hare Krishna, the devotees now had to be cautious of avoiding the 10 offenses. The other was that the devotees had to avoid particular things, and that was the 4 regulative principles. And Prabhupada added on to these things. They could not engage in frivolous sports. They should, as far as possible, avoid the association of non-devotees. They should not mix with non-devotees. And in that way, Prabhupada, externally, he was setting up a government structure so that they could practice their religion, though it wasn't new. And internally, he had to further and further train his students. And not only that, he set up a third notice. And that was the 26 qualities of a devotee that Lord Chaitanya gave to Sanatana Goswami. And when the devotees, Gargamuni, he described this. When Prabhupada put that list up of the 26 qualities, he was thinking, I don't even have one of these qualities. So this was something that the devotees had to aspire for. And this was how Prabhupada, very, very gently, very gradually, was bringing his students and now his disciples to a higher level. Now, number G, it's not a number, it's section G. With the view towards achieving the aforementioned purposes, which were the 6 that we just read, to publish and distribute periodicals, magazines, books, and other writings. Now, this printing was also started at 26 Second Avenue. Prabhupada, he went to a country club one day. And in those days, we didn't have photostatting. It didn't exist. We had what was called mimeograph. You had to type onto stencils, and the ink would go through the holes that the typing created and create duplications. And it was a machine. So Prabhupada bought 2 of those machines. Each machine was $150, and Prabhupada convinced the manager there that you give me both machines for $150. He said, take them. So then the devotees had to, first of all, they had to have something to print. So Srila Prabhupada reestablished the Back to Godhead magazine. And they used to print about 300 copies. And they would charge 15 cents for one copy. It was about 22 pages thick. So they would print all the inside pages on the mimeograph machine, turning out the pages by hand. Gargamuni would do all of this. And the outside cover, they would get printed at an offset, so make it look nice. So we have all of those old copies in Prabhupada's library. You can see them. All the effort that the devotees made to print, collate, and then distribute these books by hand. So now, after that, Prabhupada began what is called the ISKCON Press. And as more and more devotees joined, and Prabhupada's books became bigger and bigger, they learned how to make bigger books. And all of the devotees, we all had to take part in putting Prabhupada's books together, whoever lived in New York at that time. So we were all there. You can see this is when some girls had joined. We would collate the books, we would do the photography, everything that was needed. We learned everything about printing at that time to help Prabhupada produce his books. And then finally, when the quality wasn't as good as Prabhupada wanted it, and he wanted things done en masse, he sent Brahmananda to Japan, and Dainipan started to print the first books. Teachings of Lord Chaitanya, the Krishna book, Nectar Devotion, these were all printed in Japan, high quality. Prabhupada was so happy. But this was how these 6 principles were accomplished by the 7 principle of printing, publishing books. And that was all done originally by the devotees who stayed with Prabhupada. Now we have a library of books, over 80 books that Srila Prabhupada produced in his lifetime. Now many of these books, like for instance, the devotees would sometimes be called crazy So Prabhupada gave a lecture about who's crazy. So that lecture was made into a little pamphlet called Who's Crazy? And then there was another lecture that Prabhupada gave, and that was made into a pamphlet called Reservoir of Pleasure. And we're still distributing the Reservoir of Pleasure 56 years later. So these books, the knowledge is eternal, they're applicable at all time and circumstances, and that book, Reservoir of Pleasure, is still being distributed by the millions all over the world in all different languages. So this is the potency of Srila Prabhupada's plan, that you introduce Krishna consciousness and you spread it through the Brihat Mridanga, through his books. And we're all assisting Prabhupada some way or other. Whatever you're doing, you're assisting with these seven principles of ISKCON. So Matchless Gifts, although it was just a storefront, this Matchless Gifts little shop became a transcendental place of the Lord's pastimes, because the chanting of Hare Krishna was going on there. Now the devotees, because there was only one little center then, there in New York City. But then some of the devotees, Mukunda, Janaki, then they got together, four other devotees, they would be devotees, there would be Jamuna and Gurudas, Malati and Sharmasundar. Prabhupada asked them to go to California and start a temple there. So for the first time, Prabhupada, he sprouted wings and he flew. He left 26 Second Avenue. And the devotees, they thought Prabhupada would never leave. They thought, this is it. This is our transcendental place of pilgrimage. We're the devotees. We're doing the printing. But no, Prabhupada left. And he went to establish the center in California. And then Los Angeles. And then Montreal. Prabhupada, he had worldwide vision. And then from Montreal, he sent devotees to England. He sent them to France. He sent them to Germany. And then he sent Burijan to Hong Kong all alone. He sent devotees to Australia, to Japan. Prabhupada, he was unstoppable. As soon as anyone became initiated, he would send them to open a temple. So this was the way ISKCON was created. The devotees, they had just gotten their beads, they had just got initiation, and Prabhupada would send them to open a temple. And they had to become temple presidents, they had to become cooks, they had to become lecturers, instantly. As soon as they became devotees. I remember, the first day I went on Sankirtan, they dressed me in a sari, they put back the Godheads in my magazine. I didn't know anything. But that's how you learn. So Prabhupada, yes, he explained that he would put you in the judge's seat and then you had to become the judge. There were no bhakti shastris, there was nothing, nothing at all. We had Prabhupada's three books and the new books that were being printed, and whatever we learned from those books, that's what we taught, and we made more devotees. And this is how ISKCON grew. And there was a mannerism to how we opened up, because 26 Second Avenue was a storefront. So most of the first temples, the devotees would rent storefronts. And a lot of them had the same interior decoration. They would take a parachute and they would stick it in the middle of the ceiling, and they would take this parachute to all sides of the room to make it look like a dome. And then the parachute would come along the walls, and on the walls they would get these beautiful pictures of Sita Ram and Radha and Krishna and Vishnu, and put them all around the walls, and then have the altar. On the altar would always be Lord Jagannath, because that's who Prabhupada initiated, the first deities, the Jagannath deities. So all the temples worshiped Lord Jagannath at that time. So Prabhupada this was phase one of ISKCON. He now established ISKCON, and every time the devotees went out to make a new temple, they had to use the same constitution of incorporation to incorporate their society. This was phase one. He was accomplishing what his spiritual master asked him to do. But Prabhupada, he had his own plans. He wanted to go back to India and reestablish the Vedic culture that had been lost, hundreds of years of Mughal and British rule. He wanted to bring the Vedic culture back up to the forefront. So as soon as this was established, on October 7th, 1966, Prabhupada wrote to the Goswami, Gaurchand, in Radha Damodar Temple, that we had measured the land, I would now like to take that land and establish a Rupanuga Paravidyapith in the Radha Damodar Temple. And my American disciples, they will pay for everything, they will come and establish a beautiful center there for education. They weren't agreeable. That was when Prabhupada decided he had to make his own temples in India. Prabhupada had worldwide vision. But in order to continue his preaching, he had to get permanent residence here in America. Now, when Prabhupada, when there were enough devotees, had been initiated, first 11, then another 4, then another 2, is growing. In the first year, there were 19 disciples initiated. Then Prabhupada decided, well, we have to have some structure within our temple. So the devotees who were regulars, he brought them together. He asked, who will be our president? So everyone had different suggestions. They said, maybe Kirtanananda, because he was the first to join you. And Prabhupada said, no. Our first temple president will be Brahmananda, because he's supporting the temple. With his job as a teacher, he's giving $400 every month. And our secretary will be Satsvarup, because he's doing all the typing, the editing of the books. And our treasurer will be Gargamuni. And that's how Gargamuni Prabhupada named him Gargamuni, because he was in charge of the money. And Prabhupada taught him, he was 18 years old, Prabhupada taught him everything about accounting, because Prabhupada could see everyone. He knew that Brahmananda was a leader. Even in his school days, he was a leader. He had his own group. Satsvarup was an intellectual. And Gargamuni, he was a businessman. So Prabhupada, he knew all of his disciples and how to engage them perfectly. So then Brahmananda was trying to get permanent residence for Prabhupada. He went from one lawyer to another, giving them money this way. All the lawyers did was take his money. So Prabhupada, what he did was he went to Canada. And Canada and India, they were both Commonwealth countries. So Prabhupada got permanent residency in Canada for free, because he was an Indian citizen. And then with that permanent residency, he applied for permanent residency in America, and they immediately gave it to him for free. So when he came back to America with his permanent residency, he said to Brahmananda, all right, now give me my money back that you wasted on all the lawyers. So now Prabhupada had permanent residency. This is Prabhupada's application. You can't see it so well here, but in the upper left-hand corner, Prabhupada's category was alien. So alien means you come from another place. So even at that time, Prabhupada, it was understood that he was not from this planet. So they took all of his, Gargamuni helped him to put all of his fingerprints, everything there, and this was his application. Prabhupada was 5 feet 4 inches tall. He weighed 145 pounds. Okay, if anybody is interested. Sometimes we wonder, because Prabhupada, when he sits on the Vyasasana, when he's leading the devotees, he looks gigantic. He was five feet 4 inches tall. Now, the next step, after the incorporation anybody could do. You make your own religion, you make your own society, but to be actually recognized by the U.S. government, you had to have tax exemption. So, again, they went back to Mr. Goldsmith. He drafted the tax exemption application, and he did something very, very interesting. He took those 7 principles and he condensed them into 1 principle. I'm going to read it. The specific purpose for which the society was formed is for the worship of Krishna through prayer and congregational chanting, and to teach and propagate the Bhagavad Gita to the members of the society and others. The society also contemplates to purchase a building to house its temple. So this is how Mr. Goldsmith was able to very simply present what the goals of ISKCON were. And the IRS, the Internal Revenue Service, they accepted the application, and now ISKCON was a genuine, bona fide religion within the United States of America. This was the step two of Prabhupada's establishing ISKCON in America. And then when he went back, just a few years after, in 1970, he brought the devotees back to India. He used the same principles, and with the Charity Commission here in India, he established the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And his plan was, because Dwarkadish, when Prabhupada established the world headquarters in Los Angeles, the deity Dwarkadish told Prabhupada, now you go back to India. And Prabhupada objected. He said, my god brothers are there in India, they're preaching. This is the place that my Guru Maharaj gave me to preach. And Dwarkadish promised Prabhupada that if you go back to India, I will give you a better temple than what you have here in Los Angeles. So Prabhupada came back, and he was wondering where to make this better temple. Instead, Sri Krishna gave Prabhupada three temples while he was here on the planet. He established Vrindavan, that we're sitting in now, Bombay, and Mayapur. Well, this is our Los Angeles temple. This Prabhupada called this New Dwarka, because many families were attracted to this place. This was how Prabhupada appreciated America. He used to say that India is my motherland and America is my fatherland. And when, after establishing this temple, Prabhupada would get very frustrated with the slow progress, especially in Bombay. I don't know if I should stop or not. A few more minutes? Okay. Continue. If anyone wants to go, you're welcome to go. There will be no offense taken. There was so much obstacle, both here, especially in Bombay. You can hear about Prabhupada's struggles. I'll build you a temple, written by Giriraj Swami. And in Mayapur, his own godbrothers opposed Srila Prabhupada's establishing a temple in Mayapur. So Prabhupada was so frustrated. When Prabhupada couldn't walk anymore, he couldn't eat anymore, he decided, I'm going back to America to preach. I'm fed up with India. I'll never return here again. Because Prabhupada just wanted to preach all over the world. And all of this fighting, all of the obstacles by the Indian government itself was upsetting Prabhupada. But ultimately, Prabhupada was successful in all places. And Prabhupada made sure, because when the devotees first came here to India, of course the media, they were very enamored that we have American and European Vaishnavas chanting in the street, becoming Brahmins. So they would write articles about the devotees, and they wouldn't mention Prabhupada's name. So Prabhupada made a rule, and this rule has to hold in anything that we print, anything that we present to the media. Prabhupada's name must always be mentioned as the founder Acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Because Mukunda, he realized in 1966, Prabhupada was establishing this incorporation so that when he left this world, when all of his disciples left this world, there would be an ongoing institution, a society, that Krishna consciousness could be practiced all over the world for the next 10,000 years, whether Prabhupada was present here or not. But he would be present as the founder, Acharya, of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. So here we have Prabhupada at the grand opening, when this was the great success of Prabhupada's life. He established this wonderful temple here in Vrindavan. And then 10 years later, after this incorporation, in 1976 another great success, and that was Prabhupada. He was able to establish Rath Yatra down Fifth Avenue in New York City with three carts. So Prabhupada said, the most important country, the most important city, on the most important street, which was Fifth Avenue. So now we have, of course, 2 years we couldn't have it, but now they reestablished it this year. Every year, major Rath Yatra in New York City. So from the very beginnings at Tompkins Square Park, 26 Second Avenue, ISKCON has become a success with chanting and dancing devotees all over the world and temples all over the world. Now, Srila Prabhupada, at the time when Prabhupada was preparing to go into Samadhi, he simply begged his devotees, I've given you this big ISKCON movement. If you can, please expand it. At least maintain it. Don't let this decrease. Please cooperate. And then Prabhupada started to cry. Everyone in the room started to cry. That was probably the most painful moment of my life, to see Prabhupada cry. So we have this movement. It's Srila Prabhupada's movement. We have the good, we have the bad, and we have the ugly. But we have to be determined to never leave ISKCON. We have to always try to push it forward. If there's a problem, push it forward. Because when you leave ISKCON, you make Prabhupada cry. So let's make Prabhupada happy and push on Krishna consciousness to every town and village. This was spoken by Udayananda Prabhu. So 50 years later, in 2016, we celebrated the 50th, the Golden Jubilee of ISKCON. This, I don't know if you can see it from a distance, this was the celebration in Calcutta at Prabhupada's birthplace. And 108 countries were represented at that time. They had Sankirtan with their flags going all over Calcutta, and then from there they went all over India. From 108 countries, devotees came to show that this is truly an international society, that Krishna is not a Hindu god just for the Indians. Krishna is the Supreme Lord for all living entities. He's in all of our hearts. And we should assist Prabhupada, as the Srimad Bhagavatam says, Kalir dosha nite rajan, asya heko mahan guna, kirtanad eva krishnasya, mukta sangha param rajet. That, my dear King, Parikshit, although Kali Yuga is an ocean of faults, there is still one good quality about this age. Simply by chanting the Hare Krishna Mahamantra, one can become free from material bondage and be promoted to the transcendental kingdom. So let's all chant together, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Jai.